You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
I'm super excited for today because, as you know, if you are in our community or following along, I believe very strongly that while half the battle is coming up with the ideas and being innovative, the other half is getting people to listen to you and to buy into your ideas. So I sought out a communication expert. So today I have Kirsten Berkland with me. She is a self-described communications nerd, and she's using that to the advantage of public speakers everywhere. Her official title is President of Prep Talk Coaching, which is a presentation training consultancy in Portland, Oregon. But ask her to describe her day, and it's all geared around helping people say what they want to say in a way that is powerful and authentic, and I'm looking forward to digging into that. She helps executives build and deliver killer keynotes. She works with TED Talk speakers and helps people across a variety of industries make the most of their natural speaking style. Kirsten began her career as a radio and print journalist before moving into the world of corporate PR, where she landed at a high-tech PR agency managing PR campaigns for Microsoft, so she kind of knows what she's doing. She eventually took on the company's global client training business before giving into her inner training nerd, diving into training as a study and a career. She launched her own training consultancy in 2012 and has been very busy ever since. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I am too. So let's just back up. So just for perspective, Let people know how you became this communication expert and what that really looks like for you.
Well, like any expertise, I became an expert by failing many, many times, certainly. I started out as a journalist, and I love telling stories. And it was interesting to me, even then, in my 20s, people couldn't articulate things very well. And I didn't really know what that meant until I moved into the world of PR, became a spokesperson myself, failed miserably on live camera many times. And as I moved into working with clients like at Microsoft, it became really clear that there is a disconnect between our brain and our mouth. So I just got
such a short distance,
very short distance. And so I stopped writing the messages for my clients and moved into helping them deliver those messages in the right way.
So I love that because, you know, that's with innovation for me is I stopped giving people ideas and teaching them how to have ideas. So we're spirit humans. Talk to me a little bit about that communication. Like, what did you see over time, whether that was something that you were doing or that your clients were doing that doesn't work? What are we missing here in our brain to mouth connection?
Yeah. Two things popped to mind immediately. Certainly one of the biggest is that we do not realize that we don't have to say everything we know. We've got this inner second grader that, you know, at one point, you know, raised their hand in class and got pats on the head for knowing everything.
Interesting.
When you are a 40-year-old standing up in front of a pitch meeting or a client, you do not need to say everything you know. Yeah. You need to say the most important thing that audience needs to know. And if people will just go there first, that will make a big difference.
So I'm intrigued. How do you figure that out? The difference between bleh and like, here are the things that actually matter that I say.
Yeah. Well, it is about stepping out of your own competence for a while. We go through our lives and we're very good at what we do, right? And we live in it and we grind it up. But we have to stop for a minute and do two things. One, realize that the 80-20 rule applies every time you open your mouth. So 80% of your influence is going to come from 20% of your content. So if nothing else, when you're thinking about what to say, write down 10 bullet points, circle the two that are most important, and really focus on those. Practice them as much as you can.
So that's really interesting. Sorry, I just want to dig in for a second there and make sure that people watching and listening caught that 80-20 rule being 20% of the content is going to create 80% of the influence, if I got that right. Like, that's actually kind of a big deal versus thinking, if I can show this person how much I know, I'll influence them. And I think what I hear you saying, right, is that actually, I would say, probably minimizes your influence or your ability to get that buy-in.
It does. In some ways, it can reveal our ego and our insecurities. When we stand up in front of somebody and we make it clear to them, I'm going to tell you everything I know right now. that doesn't necessarily a way to connect with them,
right,
to inspire them. You know, if you want to build a better mousetrap, nobody wants to see the reams of data that you have about rodent infestations, right? They want to hear about that visceral moment when you see that mouse go across your field of vision and you jump on top of the table and scream your guts out. We can all feel that and connect with that. But most of us don't take the time to think, what is it about my 20% that people are going to actually feel?
Wow. So I want to dig into the feel part of it. You know, I hear a lot, because I do a lot of keynoting, I hear a lot about you've got to be a great storyteller. You have to be a great storyteller, and things that make that make some people better storytellers than others. What is your take on that? Is storytelling the best way, whether it's data or an idea, you know, whatever it is you're trying to get across, is storytelling really the best way? And if so, what are the techniques that you found that really work?
Storytelling can be a really powerful tool. It's also true that not everybody is a natural storyteller.
Yeah.
So anytime you're thinking about your communications, it has to start with, what am I good at? What comes naturally to me? If you're a natural storyteller, yes. If you're not a natural storyteller, there are other ways that you can grab people by the brain and make them remember what you're saying. It is with color. It might be an analogy that you use to describe something in a big way. I'm also a big fan of micro stories. So instead of telling, you know, this long sort of 3-minute story that could be very evocative and compelling, if one of your 20% data points might be perhaps, we worked really hard on this, it took us 6 months to build this. Instead of saying, we've worked on this since October, you can say, you know what? Since Halloween, we've been locked up in a conference room with pizza boxes stacked this high, killing ourselves trying to solve this problem. Just simply phrasing it in that way is going to stick a little better.
Well, and the imagery behind that is so much more powerful than 6 months. I mean, what is that even? I love that. I absolutely love that. So one of the things that struck me about your bio as I was reading it actually was you talk about working with people's natural strengths or natural styles, I should say.
Yeah.
What are those type of styles that you see and how do you do that?
Oh, what type of styles do I see in my clients?
Yeah.
Well, they're as individual as they are in some ways. A couple things come across a lot. There is what I like to call the professor, and it's the person who wants to teach everyone. And that can sometimes lead to not focusing on connecting with everyone. So we try to pair up that strength with, yes, I'm going to be your counselor and I'm going to teach you without any sort of overbearing arrogance that might come from that tone. And also making sure that the connection is there. Another type that I see is the person who has a lot of energy and they're really bubbly and people love that.
That's me.
It's great.
But.
No, there's no but with you. I will say that there is a but with some of the bubbly people. And I say this because I have been, I'm a recovering bubbly person. Is you miss the opportunity to sometimes bring just a moment. It might be 20 seconds of gravitas when you're talking about something serious.
Yeah.
Or it might be that you can bring in your dreamer a little bit. You know, Bill Gates is perhaps not known as the best speaker in the world, but there are moments, if you look back at his communication, where he talked about, you know, I envision a world where everybody will have a computer in their home. You know, at the time he said that, that was science fiction.
Yeah, and that was crazy talk.
But why not take a second to think about how are you inspiring as well as informing?
Yeah. You know, it's funny about the bubbly thing. I will say, and I've had to work really hard on this because I tend to use a lot of jokes and humor. It's just my natural style. But I lose the seriousness and I've had to really back up because I still get that it's serious, but I'm not communicating that when I'm constantly being funny and silly and, you know.
Well, and at the same time, you don't want to turn off who you are. The
yeah.
most powerful thing you can do anytime, whether you're in front of 2 people or 2,000 people, is to be yourself. So I would encourage people to never let that awareness of, okay, here's what I'm not good at, or here's what I want to get better at, to dampen the goodness that is you. It really is just about being conscious of it and saying, you know, all right, I'm going to look at my content. Look, I've got an opportunity for 20 seconds here. It's time for me to be serious or inspiring or whatever it is that you want to be at that moment. And just think about it consciously and highlight a word that is going to trigger you as a speaker to remember. And sometimes it's a phrase like, I want to shift gears for a bit. Mm. And that can be your reminder to do that.
Right, to actually kind of switch a little bit. So where do you think communication typically breaks down?
Oh, there are so many flavors of breakdown, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember Michael Bay from a couple of years ago? He's a big Hollywood movie producer.
Oh, yeah.
He was speaking at like a Sony event or something. And he flubbed up, you know, he had like 50 words in his script.
I remember that, yeah.
And then he ran off the stage.
That was the part that got all the news, was the fact that he was like, exit stage right.
Right. So there's a breakdown that I would say is partly mental. you know, there's individual breakdowns. There's breakdowns that happen when we speak in a meeting, et cetera.
Right.
There are two things that I would say don't happen. One is that people don't take the time to go into the three layers of why. Mm. Do you know what I mean when I
no.
say
that? Tell us more.
You know, if I say I have a great product, yeah. most people stop at saying I have a great product and they want to tell you everything about that great product. Yeah. Or your second grader does. But if they stop and ask themselves, well, why is it a great product? Well, it's great because it does X, Y, and Z. Why does it do X, Y, and Z? And oftentimes on that third level, you can get to the so what of
yeah.
your content.
The meat of it, yeah.
You know, and then you can start telling a story, whether it's micro or macro, about, you know, listen, people for years have not had a great mousetrap and they're scared to death and they're jumping on tables. And that's why, you know, my patented mousetrap is this. You really got to go through that narrative path. That's the first thing. The second area of breakdown is because a lot of people don't acknowledge their listener. Now, it could be in a one-on-one conversation.
Right.
I'm an artist at now acknowledging my husband's point before I try to change his mind. I have to do that. But it's also just taking a second to pay verbal homage to where your audience is. It can be as something as simple as, listen, we all struggle with X, Y, and Z. I know that you do. I know that I do. When you take that moment, you've built a base of connection that makes it a little harder to break down over time.
Do you think a lot of that in communication is, I don't know if it's the right language, is stepping into your audience, your listener's shoes, or just taking the time to not just assume they get what you get?
Absolutely. How many times have we just assumed that once we start talking, people are going to understand what's in our head?
Yeah.
But it is about understanding where they are. It can be as easy as, you know, when you start building your content, resist the temptation to write down everything you know, make 27,000 PowerPoint slides showing everything you know with cute little pictures. It's not that you can't do that, but take a second and really think about what's the one thing or two things that this person really does not know that I think they need to know. And when you start there, you can go backward and think, well, why don't they know that? Mm. They've never had that experience necessarily. That might be a good opportunity for me to tell a story right now.
Yeah.
Or to give an example. When you start thinking about your content rather than what's in your head and more about what you want to put in their head, you are miles ahead of most other speakers at that point.
I love that question of, okay, here's what I think they need to know, but wait a minute, why don't they know that? And answering that first. Yeah. And I would assume kind of the next layer to that is why do they care to know that? What are they going to do with that information?
That's a hard question to ask ourselves sometimes as experts and speakers. Because sometimes when you ask yourself the question, so what?
Yeah.
You have to hunt harder than you maybe think you do, if you're really in their minds. But that can be a tremendous practice and give you really a ton of great content.
Yeah, you know, I will tell you on a kind of personal note, when I do keynotes, I had this, first of all, I gave too much in 1 hour. People were exhausted. They would leave like, oh my God. Like too much, right? And I, you know, but the type A in me wanted to give everything.
Yeah.
And it was working against me. And then I started to pare it down. But it was when I really said, well, when I really had to ask myself, why does someone care about this? That's where my communication got a lot better. Because then I had to really answer to myself of, is this information important enough to share? Or is this important to me? Which are two different things, right?
Yeah. It's very true. I mean, I don't even have anything to add to that. You're a very articulate communicator.
Well, that's because you and I have talked before and I've already picked up some lessons. So I have a bunch of questions swimming, but I want to back up and say, what do you think is if you were to say, like, here's one thing to think about when you're in more of a meeting, one-on-one, or small group communication versus, I know you work with TED Talk speakers and other keynote speakers. So, and what's the one piece of advice there if you were to kind of break it down a little bit for them?
Sure. I think in a meeting, this is pretty tactical.
Yeah.
But in a meeting, it can be really helpful to have what I call a flagging phrase, ready to go in your mouth. Mm. And that means that you've thought in advance, what's my 20%? And it allows you to frame up what you're going to say. And a flagging phrase can be something as simple as, you know, I want to focus on one idea. Let me bring it back to one concept. Let me leave you today with one idea. All of those kinds of things. It's a same way of saying, you know, at the end of the day, but that doesn't work.
Right, right.
So you have to find something that works for you. When I was a spokesperson, mine was, you know, it all comes down to one thing. Mm. That worked for me. And I knew that when I said that, the next thing I said would be the last thing I say. Because there is a moment in your conversation, people listen most closely to the first thing you say and the last thing you say. So if you can think about what those things are, you're in better shape. Mm.
So are you saying that, I just want to make sure I have it right, because I want to make sure I use this appropriately. Are you saying then, so when I started off, say like, okay, I want to talk about this one idea, and at the end, let me loop it back to this one idea.
Yeah.
To yes. kind of bookend your part of the presentation.
Yeah. I teach my clients a technique called the flight plan. And that is understanding what your takeoff is, understanding that 20% that you're going to do up in the air. And then using that flagging phrase as a way of saying, I'm coming in for a landing. The next thing I say, you're going to want to pay attention to.
Interesting.
And then your landing is solid. Your inner second grader has not hijacked the plane.
Right.
Where you come down and you're like, and also I know this. Right. And but that you land very definitively and you say, and that's really all I have to say about that.
So can you give me some examples? Because I think that's really powerful. And I think, you know, we always laugh about wedding speeches by the best man or bridesmaid that nope, they clearly did not plan.
Right.
And the other day I saw that in a meeting where someone got up for 5 minutes, but it was clearly unplanned and mm-hmm. it was really painful. There was no takeoff, no landing. I think they circled the airport a couple of times. Like, I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah.
So I love that one example. Will you share some other ways that kind of translates into how you communicate in those situations?
Yeah, you mean when you're up at 30,000 feet and
yeah.
you're going, holy crap, I need to shut.
Yeah, yeah, because we yes. all have that, right? Where we're like, yeah. oh my God, I'm rambling. Like, I know I'm rambling.
Yeah. You know, that's where the flagging phrase can be your savior. Mm. And it's where that idea of acknowledgement or the bigger, the three layers of why, rather, can really come to your rescue. So you're up at 30,000 feet. There's a gun to your head from your inner second grader making you say but and. You can take control back by saying, you know, let me stop for a minute. That's a phrase that you have in your mouth and you're ready to go. Let me stop for a minute because I want to bring it back to a bigger idea. And that bigger idea is way up here and it's something that's going to have everybody nodding. Everyone can relate to that idea.
So get back on the path.
Let's get back on the path. Yeah, and then you can focus again just on one thing. And when you use your flagging phrase, so again, I just want to remind you, it's all about A, B, and C. And you end in that very definitive way, wheels down, no dragging, you're done.
You know, what I'm thinking as you're talking is that that's such a brilliant kind of the airplane analogy and using that to craft a plan. But I think also that's really brilliant when you think about presenting innovative ideas in particular, because the challenge with innovation often when people present their ideas is that people tend to go all over the place because it's possibilities. It's still kind of never ending, right? In terms of what you can do, which is the beauty of it. On one hand, on the other hand, without that, what I think you're saying is the flight plan, you really don't have a focus to get people to rally behind.
Yes, it's true. And the flight plan is good because it forces that 20% in some ways. And what's really interesting is that this is muscle memory. It is mental muscle memory. Hmm. I can now go into any situation and know that I can say something relatively memorable, or at least clear, at the very least it's clear. And concise, and that I can end definitively rather than maybe what I have done on camera in an embarrassing way.
Well, we've all had those moments.
So it is about practicing that for sure. Yeah.
So let's switch to you're in front of an audience, and whether that's because you're doing a presentation style, like a keynote style or a TED Talk, or maybe you're presenting to 2,000 people about the state of your business, you know, like, you know, you see that often in big companies where they're doing that. What are some of the tactics or strategies that you have for those clients of yours?
when they're actually up on stage.
Yeah.
The stage stuff. Well, I always go back to what my TED Talk speakers do. You know, they do a lot of really wonderful things, but one is that they have a lock date on their content. And most executives with whom I work who are not TED speakers want to futz with their content to the 11th hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is not what Steve Jobs did. He got his content relatively down. He practiced for 3 weeks in the Moscone Center. Mm-hmm. And he refined his content through practice. Mm-hmm. So that your prep is not necessarily just, I'm going to look at these words on screen, say them silently in my head until they make sense to me. I'm going to get up. I'm going to stand up. My diaphragm is going to be positioned so my voice can be more forceful.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the words rather than just think them. That's a big part of it. And practicing for delivery is key. Yeah. You know, any TED Talk speaker, you know, they think very strategically about where do I pause here? Where do I slow it down or lower my volume? Things like that can be very powerful.
Where does, sounds like a naive question, but where does authenticity play into that? Because, you know, you're absolutely right. When you're on stage or, you know, when you're presenting, you want to think about, you want to have powerful pauses and all of that. But then there's also, like to you said earlier, there's also your natural style.
Yeah. Yeah. We never want to go into mode. I call it mode, you know, where we like, hello, I am here to talk to you and I'm a robot. I say all the right things. That's not the goal. The goal is to be you.
Yeah.
You know, a TED Talk speaker has a real challenge because they have to connect their you with their delivery. So when they practice that pause or that change in feeling and emotion, it is because it is connected to how they literally feel and care about that content. There's no faking it there. For the CEO who has a keynote, I work really hard with those guys to find out what part do you really feel most passionate about.
Yeah.
And let yourself go. You have to make allowances for people's personalities. Not everyone's a TED Talk speaker.
Yeah.
But everyone can be honest in front of a stage, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, that's very well said. And I think you can definitely feel authenticity, like if someone really, whether they're good, quote unquote, good as a speaker, you can really feel someone's authenticity in front of a room of 2 or 2,000, doesn't really matter. I want to talk a little bit about outcomes because I think we kind of all intuitively get why communication matters so much, but I'd love to hear some stories without giving away anything that, you know, you can't give away of kind of the before and afters of communication. Like if this were a, you know, magazine and you've got like, here's what it looked like before and here's what it looked like after. Can you share some of those with us?
Sure. The one that comes to mind, first of all, is this big deal VP at a big company we've all heard of. She's a fantastic speaker to everyone else. But in her head, she's very aware that her knees literally are shaking. She feels as though there's a disconnect between her confidence and the outcome. Mm. And so it was a lot of work with her to get her to understand how other people viewed her. And to her credit, what she did was she took this on like a lion. She had me follow her around to presentations and meetings for 3 months.
Wow.
Not only that, she did not keep me in the shadows. She pointed to me at every meeting in front of her team, which I thought was very brave. And she said, wow. You know, I'm working on this. You guys say that I'm a good speaker, but I really want to be great. And so that's why Kirsten is here. And I want you to give her feedback. She's going to ask you questions. And I went around and did that. And it was really impressive because that executive did not give in to some of the ego that some of we have.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a mark of a good speaker are the people who say, I want to be really good.
Yeah. So what do you think the outcome was for her after working with you?
The outcome for her was that she took on a lot higher level speaking roles than she would let herself take on before. She had her whole PR team had designed a year-long information campaign that had her out on the speaking trail, had her doing news interviews, satellite interviews, and she was turning those down because of her lack of confidence. And so once she was really connected and not only saw how well she did, but felt how well she was doing.
Right.
She was able to really dive into those things and start folding in things like mastery of pause and communication. And she did end up doing a TED Talk. And it was tremendous because she was herself.
So I want to loop it back to TED Talks or other talks. Can you give us a before and after of one that's more of a, I get up on stage speaking. Not that she didn't, but you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah, of course. I think about this. What if this is a TED Talk speaker as well. And she was not a good speaker. She was very young. She had a very difficult to understand accent, and she also had a stutter. And we had to get her up on the TED Talk stage and get past that.
Yeah.
And it was about letting her be herself and acknowledge that right up front so that the audience doesn't feel uncomfortable. But working with her by putting her on camera, letting her listen to herself as well as watch herself, and giving her a solid narrative allowed her to get up on that stage. And she was the only standing ovation of the day.
Wow.
Now, to be clear, I was not the only one working with her. I don't want to take full credit for her, but it was a really powerful moment. She ran off stage when she was done. The MC had to run off stage and go get her and bring her back on stage so she could experience this standing ovation that in the beginning of the process, she never would have imagined that she
Oh, that's such a wonderful feeling too, especially when you're not expecting it, you know, like it just feels so good. Do you think that, you know, I've heard you say a couple times now, mention confidence. Mm-hmm. So is that half the battle, is just like having that belief in yourself that you can get up there and say the things you need to say?
You know, it's such a personal thing. For some people, confidence is related to their adrenal glands and how much adrenaline is pumping out at the moment and making them feel nervous. For some people, it is just simply about practice. I've done this enough times that I'm not scared anymore of the audience or making a fool of myself or not saying things
just the right thing. Yeah.
I mean, the key to all of it is practice, no matter who you are or where you are in your journey.
You know, it's funny. I've been keynoting for years, speaking for years, but I find that I'm still slightly nervous every single time. I don't know why. I just can't get rid of it. And once I'm on stage, it's fine. But the anticipation just like, I sometimes find that that's worse than once I start.
Yeah. I would argue that's really healthy though, because it,
okay, good.
Yeah, no, it does, you know, adrenaline does a lot of really good things to us. You know, it makes us feel better and see better. You can control some of it with some yogic breathing and all of that kind of stuff. But I think people need to walk away from the idea that, oh, I get nervous before I speak. I must not be a good speaker. Mm. Some of the best speakers in the world have those butterflies and that energy. It's just about getting the practice to transform that from nerves into passion.
Right. I love that. So if I'm out there listening or watching and I want to be an expert communicator, I really want to step up my game, because I think, you know, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I think it's fair to say that, you know, half the challenge and success is the communicating of your ideas. And I know that's true in innovation, where especially when you want to get people to buy into something that's never been done before, it might be a little bit different than what they're used to. Yeah. But in general, I think, you know, when you look at the great leaders, people who really move up the ranks, people who find great success, they're great communicators. So what do I do if I'm listening to start on that path? And I do want to talk about where people can connect with you, but taking a step back for a second, just overall, what should I be doing?
Yeah. I think first of all, let go of the idea that if you're going to work on this stuff, it means you're not good at it. Hmm. I view it like going to the gym. You know, this is not about, you're not going into surgery to fix something. You are going to get stronger. And so what that comes down to is understanding, what muscles do I already have? What works really well for me? What comes naturally to me? The more you can know yourself as a presenter, the better you can do. The next thing you can do is just watch and listen like crazy. Yeah. Write down phrases that work for you. Look at what people say or how they color or make their content memorable and interesting. Mm-hmm. And start thinking about your own expertise and content in that light.
You know, there's something really freeing about what you just said too, where if I consider every communication moment a moment for feedback, I don't know, there's something about it that makes it just an experiment, which makes it okay.
Yeah, for sure. You know, all speakers are Michael Phelps, I like to say. You know, I mean, certainly there are some who are really bad, of course. but many speakers who are good and fairly competent, I encourage you to think of yourself like Michael Phelps. He has a coach.
Yeah.
But he knows what his stroke is and how to make it better. And his coach just keeps him there. And I'm not saying that because you need to hire a coach. That's not my point at all. But he goes into his swimming career understanding, God, I want to be really good. I want to be the best. And you can get that with or without a coach. You just really need to want it and be ready to dive in.
Right. Well, you have to have
that metaphor.
Yeah. I like it. Well, you have to have the intention and the commitment in your actions to actually work on getting better, regardless of how you do that. What's one piece of advice that you would have for people who, specifically with innovation, because that's our, you know, our audience are innovators, who are trying to get game-changing ideas out there, things that are going to stretch people a little bit? What's kind of one or two pieces of advice and communication that you could give them kind of specifically around that?
Around communicating your innovation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Steve Jobs did it pretty well in that, you know, he got up on stage many years ago and introduced what many would say is one of the most innovative pieces of technology ever, being the iPhone.
Yeah.
He didn't talk about its memory or its touchscreen capability.
Right.
Or, you know, he talked about how it felt in your hand and what it meant to carry thousands of songs in your pocket and the connection piece. So I think understanding what the real benefit is to your audience and then articulating in a way makes them feel it rather than think it.
I love that.
That can be really, really impressive. And also just know, you know, you're fighting not just short attention span of your audience, you know, you're fighting indifference. There's so much coming at people, right? So if you can really think about how to hone your message tightly and in a colorful way, that's going to make a huge difference. You know, read the book Made to Stick, if you haven't read that. I mean,
it's a great book.
Tremendous stuff, and you can apply a lot of that to your content.
I love you said that about indifference, by the way, if you see me smiling, if you're watching this, because in my opinion, I talk about this a lot, that indifference is the biggest enemy of innovation, and it's the biggest barrier to success. It's not the marketplace, it's not the competition, it's not lack of resources, it's indifference. And we have that in the workplace too, that, you know, like you said, we're bombarded by decisions that we have to make, emails that we're getting, you know, things that are coming at us. So your job as a communicator is to help break through that barrier of indifference, because it is so strong today.
Yeah, it's, I can't say it any better than that. Yeah.
Well, you brought it up, which I was like, yes, I totally agree. All right, so Kirsten, how do people find you? How do they connect with you? And actually, let me back up. I'm jumping ahead. Talk to me about how you work with your clients to make them better communicators. What does working with you look like?
Yeah. Well, you know, I take a cue from what I see on your website. You have a great quiz on your website that says, are you ready to work on this? And you go through this list and you can see, yeah, that's me, or wow, no, that's not.
That is not. It's like, oh, that's right. You're talking about, are you a fit?
Right,
are
right.
You allowed to buy?
Are you a fit? I think I love how you do that. And I'm absolutely going to steal that from you.
You should.
Yeah.
I'm sure I took it from somebody else. So.
So working with me is a little bit like that. In my ideal world, if I get to work with the people I want to, it's people who, whether they're good or bad, want to be great.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you're starting, but you actually really want it. You're not there because I got some feedback that I'm not very good. You know, I'll work with you, certainly, but generally your attitude is going to potentially keep you away from that. So there's a lot of on-camera work involved in working with me, because I believe that I'm not the only one who should be seeing you or giving you feedback.
Yeah.
It's really important that you walk away understanding, what am I good at? What am I not good at? How do I overcome these barriers? So the camera work is really big, and assessment is really big. So there's some measurement at the beginning of the process and at the end of the process, so that you have some sense of your confidence increasing. Are you more concise? What are the things you wanted to work on, and are they better? And then the third final thing when I work with people is I make sure that it connects to their work world. You know, I do a lot of mock scenarios, whether it's pretend to be on stage and talk about this, but it's also applying it to your work. Oh, you have a meeting on Tuesday? Let's talk about what your 20% is going to be. Let's practice what your flagging phrase is. Let's practice a flight plan right now, and then report back to me how it went.
So I love that.
Constantly refine.
So do you find that when people call you, they have a deadline? Like, I've got a big presentation or a TED talk or whatever. I got accepted to TED, or, you know, I've got to present to the board how we're doing. Is that kind of their stimulus for calling? Or do people call and just say, I just want to be better?
Yeah, it's about 60% of I just want to be better.
Huh.
And probably 30% of, holy crap, I've got this thing to help me build it. And then the other stuff is kind of spread out around different things, like my manager said I had to call you.
I got feedback.
Those
are so challenging, because I really feel for them. They don't necessarily want to do it, but somebody else is telling them.
Yeah.
And hopefully in the process they realize the power of it and it all turns. But I get some of those calls too, of like, my boss told me, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel for you. We've all been there.
Yeah. Who hasn't had that conversation?
Yeah. All right, Kirsten, so how do they find you? How do they connect with you?
I'm at preptalkcoaching.com. I'm on Twitter complaining about things all the time. World, maybe don't go look at that part.
That's what Twitter's for.
Yeah, I think a good place is my website. It gives you a good sense of sort of my manifesto and the way that I think about coaching and communicating overall.
Well, thank you so much. This has been incredibly valuable. And I really, as I said in the beginning of why I wanted to interview you, I really do believe that half the battle is communication. And if you can find a way to communicate, especially new ideas to the world, in a way that actually connects with people, you have a much higher chance of success and much less frustration of the, like, why doesn't anybody get it feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. It was good to talk to you.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.